Okay, I want to try to give you a glimpse into the mind of the pattern thinker. This slide shows an origami made by Robert Lang, a specialist in origami. It was published in Discover magazine. And the praying mantis is made from a single sheet of folded paper. Now, in the background, you can see the pattern of the folding. Now, there's no way I could do this. This is more abstract. It's visual, but it's more abstract. And these slides deliberately do not have any writing on them because I'm trying to get you to think in a way away from language. Just look at that pattern and imagine how you could turn that into that beautiful praying mantis. It's not cut in any way. It's just folded. Square sheet of paper. How do you learn a concept when you think in pictures? How do you form a concept? You form a concept by putting pictures into file folders or into categories. Categories is the beginning of making concepts. And how do you teach a guide dog the concept of an intersection? So if he goes to a strange city, he's going to know what to do. If I only showed the guide dog intersections made with white lines, he wouldn't know what to do if there was no painted crosswalk. So what you have to do is show him intersections with white lines, intersections with no lines, stop signs, stop lights, dirt roads, curbs. You show him many, many different kinds of things, and that all goes in the intersection category in his brain. Then he'll have enough different pictures that he can use as templates so that when he sees a strange intersection, he's going to understand it. It's bottom-up thinking. You know, thinking by people on the spectrum is you take all the little details. You take all the little details, you put them together to form a whole. We're so-called normal people. It's top-down from the frontal cortex, and you get the hypothesis first and then try to stuff the information in it. Now, I get better and better at doing things as I learn more and more things. I've got more and more images I put on the internet that's inside my mind because my mind works just like Google for images. So the more things I have in my mind, the more things I can use my own internal search engine to search. Okay, you got a bunch of objects here. Hats, pens, videotapes, toolbox. And if you say to the person on the autism spectrum, pick out the red objects, they can usually do that. But they might look at this and go, well, I'm not going to pick the red ball because the red ball's got some white writing on it. So now you get into the concept of, you know, mostly red. But play games with categories, because further scientific research showed that people on the spectrum have a hard time making a new category, like round objects, or objects that contain plastic, or objects that contain metal. But let's say you told him to pick out the round objects. Don't be surprised if he picks his old VHS tapes, because inside the cartridge, you've got a round spool that the tape goes around. You know, we were little kids, we used to play that game 20 questions, you know, where, okay, I might be thinking about a doormat, and then the other kid asks me, is it animal, plant, or mineral? And I would say plant, and then they'd ask you, well, is it used inside the house? No. Is it used in sports? No. I gradually keep asking questions, narrowing down the category, see if they could guess that I was thinking about a doormat in 20 questions. That's a great game to play with kids on the spectrum because it helps to teach, you know, opening new file folders, making new categories in your brain. How about really abstract concepts like the Lord's Prayer? As part of my speech therapy when I was very little, at one summer camp program, the goal was to learn the Lord's Prayer, which I did. The only problem is I didn't know what it meant. This picture shows a rainbow, and at the base of the rainbow, you've got an electric power tower. That's the power and the glory. See, the thing is, with no picture, I simply just don't have any thought. Is autistic learning just memorization and scripting? Yes, in the beginning it is. And when I was in high school, kids used to tease me and call me tape recorder and walk across the parking lot and they go, tape recorder, because I was always sort of saying things the same way. But as I learned more and more and I got more and more and more experience, then my language got less and less like a tape recorder because I had more phrases I could pull out of memory and use. And then you put information into categories. I didn't even think I could think really well until I got to be 40, because you got to load a lot of information in here into the internet that's inside my mind in order to do good bottom-up thinking, where I'm taking, you know, I'm taking information that's inside here, comparing it to other information that's out there. People on the spectrum are often really good at the hidden figure test. You've got a figure. Can you see the figure on the inside the pink and yellow figure? And actually, this picture came from Wired magazine. They had an article a while ago that said, are tech genes causing autism? There's a lot of autism around Silicon Valley. Well, you wouldn't have any computers if you didn't have some, you know, autistic genes. And people that are good visual thinkers, and a lot of people on the autism spectrum, are good at this test. And when you put them in the brain scan machine, just the visual part of the brain is turned on and the rest is turned off. So now I'm going to show you how I can use visual thinking in a much more abstract way. I call it visual symbol pictures. Well, this is a picture I cut out of an advertisement somewhere, and I don't remember where, but this little bright cabin in the wilderness is like the brain scan of the autistic person. It's like direct internet connections deep into the visual cortex. Everything else is shut off like a snowy wilderness, a bright cabin in the middle of a snowy wilderness. And then I found this advertisement for a lamp store, and I thought, this is a great visual symbol picture for the brain scan of the normal person. We got so many lamps turned on in this store that we don't know where the rest of the, you know, where which one's the visual part. See, language can interfere with the visual thinking, you know, that's going on sort of beneath it. I want to try to get you to enter a world without words. I've had some people complain that these slides have no words. Well, I'm trying to get you away from thinking in words. Now, why would I put this picture of this skeletal building up here? Again, to remind me to talk about the interconnectedness of brain systems. And one of the big problems you have on the autism spectrum is the interconnections between the different departments in sort of my symbolic office, corporate office headquarters of the brain. The inter-office connections are poor. One set of offices, like graphic design, gets lots of circuits. And then our human resources and our sales department, they don't get hardly any. We don't need those social folks. There's more interesting things to do. PET scan research has shown that when you hear a word, you see a word, you speak a word, or you think about a word, different parts of the brain are light up. In fact, this is a very old slide. It's over 20 years old. You know, there actually is a lot known about the brain. In the normal brain, you have all kinds of interconnections between the different brain circuits. The research of Dr. Bruce Miller, which has been published in the journal Neurology, really gives an insight into how brain works and maybe how the autistic savant brain works. Because it's a type of Alzheimer's called frontal temporal lobe dementia, which wrecks the language parts of the brain. And then as the language parts of the brain get wrecked, art talent, like these horses in this painting that was published in the journal Neurology, looks a lot like savant art, very photorealistic. And he said, as the language parts got more wrecked, the pictures got more photorealistic. And also, in some of the patients, music talent also came out. Real interesting. And here's another painting by one of these Alzheimer's patients. And strip away the language, you had art ability coming out of like a tape deck installer, somebody that had no previous interest in art. You've got to make teaching mathematics concrete. You know, there's a number of different companies that you can get little blocks from that where different lengths of blocks, you know, relate to different numbers, you know, like 10 number one blocks fit in the space of the number 10 block. I had a set of these when I was a kid. It really made a difference. You've got to make it concrete. You want to teach multiplication, 5 times 6 equals 30. We'll then put 5 pennies across this way, 6 pennies down this way, and then fill out your whole entire grid. And then the child can see that multiplication is a form of adding. Then it makes sense. You know, get little game pieces that you can handle. Here's a 4 plus 5 equals 9, and they can actually touch the little pieces. It makes numbers concrete. And I thought this was super clever from the TEACH program. You have 5 minus 1 equals 4. And when they took away the piece, they bagged it in a baggie because you took it away. Here is 6 minus 5 equals 1. You got one piece left on the board, and five are now bagged in a baggie. You know, this teaches the concept of taking away. Now, you might wonder why, when I want to talk about emotions and social life, that I put a bunch of boxes on forklift pallets in here. Well, quite a few years ago, our library at Colorado State University got flooded. I was very upset about books being wrecked because knowledge was being destroyed. See, the thing is, I am what I do. One of the reasons why I put so much emphasis on the need to get good careers is because having a good career makes life worthwhile. I get social interaction through shared interests. You know, these kids that are getting teased, we need to get them into things that they can have a good time with other people. Things like drama club, journalism club, that would work really well for the verbal thinkers. You know, music club, chess club for the music and math minds, and art things and graphic arts things for the visual thinkers. You know, the best times I had when I was doing things with other people, like riding horses or Mr. Carlock's Model Rocket Club, those were times where I was not teased and I was having a really good time. Now, Nancy Minshew did another brain scan on me, and she found that I was interested more in things, in looking at pictures of things, rather than looking at pictures of faces. And one of the reasons why I was interested in looking at pictures of things is they had all this funky old video that must have come from the 70s. And I was trying to figure out where they got it from by looking at pictures of cars. There'd be glimpses of cars in it. I wanted to find out where it came from. You know, where'd you get these videos? It was old scratchy VHS, and they dubbed it over onto the computer. And I had no idea why they were showing me these pictures. You know, it had to be done blind. But the thing is, you need to have people in the world that are interested in things, or you're not even going to have any studio to record the cyber tower in. You know, think about back in the caveman days. Who do you think made the first stone spear? It wasn't all the social people yakking around the campfire. It was some Asperger guy making the first stone spear. Another test is where you look at big letters with little letters inside them. And like many people on the autism spectrum, I am quicker at identifying the small letters compared to the big letters. You know, the autistic brain tends to look at the details. We've got to work on helping these kids get socialized through shared interaction, shared interests. You know, you can also get a situation where you have uneven skills, where you might have a sixth grader that could do 12th grade math. Well, he needs to be doing 12th grade math. He may need special ed and reading. Or we may have a child that's in junior high school that ought to be taking a college class. And there's all kinds of great things online now. There's really great things out in the community colleges. I'm really, really saddened that in a lot of high schools there's a shortage of science teachers. But a lot of those good science teachers are out at the community colleges. And we need to be working on finding mentors. Because I look at some of the successful Asperger's, they're out in Silicon Valley, the parents apprentice them into the computer industry. Starting at about age 8, they start teaching them programming. You know, then by the time they're 12, they're doing, you know, professional level programming. Or another case might be a boy, his dad's an auto mechanic, he teaches his kid auto mechanics. And that's a great field. They're not going to export that job to China, and there's a shortage of good auto mechanics right now. We got to think about, what can they do when they grow up? You know, people need to be getting job skills when they're young, so they start learning things like being on time. Sometimes you do have to do what the boss tells you to do. There's a lot of interesting things out there in the world, and we need to be getting kids exposed to interesting things that can be career things. I mean, I found server farms really fascinating because they're electronic libraries where all the world's knowledge is, all these computers in the big building. I read about those in a magazine. I just turned me on so much. Another child's parents might, you know, work on a farm. Well, a lot of students today don't even know anything about a farm. You've got to get kids exposed to interesting things to stimulate their mind. The journal Science has an excellent thing called NetWatch, where every week they review 2 or 3 or 4 excellent, beautiful websites that would, help get a student interested in science. After reading about these server farms and an article about it in Fortune magazine, I'd say it really turned me on, the idea of the electronic library. Because to me, you know, preserving knowledge is a really, really important thing. And we still have some things we've got to work on. These server farms eat up a tremendous amount of power. We need to work on how to get them a whole lot more energy efficient, and it's going to take an Asperger mind to figure out how to make the electronic library not be such an energy pig. Some of the best social life I ever had was when I worked on construction. When I worked on designing things, and then I go out there, help supervise the construction, and we talk about building things. It's just so interesting to spend 3 hours talking about concrete forming systems, or get together with people that are interested in animal behavior and discuss animal behavior. You know, we've got to have people that are interested in things, or we're not even going to have any technology. All the social people out there, you like all the latest telephones and computer things. Well, the real social people are not the people that make these things. You know, students need to be reading things like Business Week magazine. I am just amazed at the amount of people on the Asperger spectrum that are profiled in Business Week. They're not diagnosed, but boy, they are Asperger. You know, a lot of people in the tech fields. I'm really concerned today that people on the spectrum are seeing too much really bad behavior. Sports figures behaving badly. You know, when I was a child, I didn't watch grown-ups behaving badly on TV. You know, the thing is, in a way, I'm more of a product of my environment. I can learn to be a good person, or I can learn to be a bad person. I was not a good sport when I was a child. I had to be taught turn-taking. I had to be taught sportsmanship. You know, in the 50s, you played a lot of these little board games that required turn-taking. These children need to learn how to take turns. You know, when I was a young child, I had my problems, but I was included in the sports thing. And recently I saw a videotape of a young boy. I was having a lot of problems. And he walked up to the children, other children on the basketball court, and he just told them that they were stupid. He used a bad word that I don't want to use on Cyber Tower, so I'm going to just say call them stupid. Well, I wouldn't have done that. I had learned when I was really young that you just don't... You know, if you want to be included in a basketball game, you don't go up and say something rude to the other kids. You know, a lot of movies today don't have clear-cut values. I'm concerned about all the violent video games. Some of these kids get addicted to video games. I would have been one of them addicted to video games, especially the rapid movement, shoot 'em up things. That kind of video game, an hour a day is enough. I was allowed to have an hour a day after lunch where I could stim and spin this little brass thing around. And if video games have been around, that would have been limited to an hour a day. Now, there's some people smart enough to program them. Now, that's fine. If a kid wants to program a game, that's just fine. Playing them for hours a day, that's not fine. I'm not smart enough in math to program a video game. No, and then getting addicted to video games wouldn't have helped me get into a field that I was good at, designing the cattle handling facilities. Also, students need to learn that you've got to, like, do work that other people want. People don't want me talking endlessly about cattle chutes. They want me to design them. And sometimes I have to design them the way other people want them. When it comes to religion, teach positive things in a very concrete way, like the golden rule in a concrete way. You don't steal other kids' toys because you wouldn't like it if they stole yours. And do something nice, share your toys because you'd like it if another child shared your toys. When you get older, maybe work on, you know, building Habitat for Humanity or something like that, where that's doing a good deed for somebody else. Stay away from the negative things. It's really important to work on the sensory things. You know, the occupational therapists, they've been doing this for years and years and years, and pressure is calming to the nervous system. Pressure really calms down the nervous system. You know, there's a lot of problems with sensory scrambling, whereas with some of these individuals that remain nonverbal, their hearing is like a terrible cell phone with a terrible connection. And you do something like pressure, like this therapist is doing right here, then you can work on some of your speech therapy or some of your applied behavior analysis therapy, and the signal gets through. It's like getting over by the window, holding a cell phone, you know, close to the window, and the speech will get through. Other activities that are really helpful are slow swinging, 10 or 12 cycles a minute, and balancing things. Things like sitting on a ball, because that activity of having to balance sometimes helps the brain to stabilize the signals. Nobody really knows how these things work, but there's abnormalities in the vestibular and the balance parts of the brain. When I got into puberty, I started having horrible anxiety attacks, tremendous anxiety attacks. You know, it's like looking for predators all the time. Any little thing, get really anxious, really, really scared over it. And I watched cattle going in a squeeze chute out at a ranch, the next door neighbor's ranch. And I noticed that sometimes when they put the cattle in the squeeze chute for their vaccinations, they just kind of relaxed. So I went and tried the squeeze chute. And then I built this squeezing machine for myself to help myself to calm down. Many people on the autistic spectrum are attracted to deep pressure over wide parts of the body. They're going to get under sofa cushions, you know, wrap themselves up in mats. Other things that are helpful are things like a weighted vest. You wear that for 20 minutes on, then you take it off for a while, otherwise you're going to get habituated. As I went through my 20s, the anxiety attacks got worse and worse and worse. I was one of the ones that needed medication. I've been on low-dose antidepressants for over 25 years, and it stopped the constant panic. Now, the mistake that's often made with antidepressants is giving too high a dose. People on the spectrum often need much lower dose of antidepressant medication, sometimes only one-third to one-fourth the starter dose. Others don't need anything. See, this is where it's very variable. Some need it, others don't. And I started on it when I was in my early 30s. There's a front view picture of the squeezing machine, and the person that's inside the machine can control it. It's very important that the individual have control of the stimulus. And sometimes with sound sensitivity, you can reduce that by taking the dreaded fire alarm and put it on a recording device. And then the child can initiate that sound really quietly and then gradually make it louder and louder, but he turns it on. It's not shoved in his face. I think it's very important to desensitize young autistic children that don't want to be touched, and you can do it with deep pressure, because that nice feeling of being hugged helps you to have nicer thoughts. There's a lot of lower down circuits. I wanted to feel that nice feeling of being hugged, but it was just too overwhelming. You know, I think it's very important that part of a good program is to work on the sensory things with an occupational therapist. One of the problems in the autism field is people get too hung up on just one educational method. Everybody agrees that little kids need lots of one-to-ones, and they fight over which therapy. The important thing is having the right teacher. But working on the sensory things is really important. And if you do some of these sensory things at the same time you do speech therapy or your ABA therapy or whatever therapy you're doing, that can help stabilize the brain and help the signal to get through. This is a rule system I still use today. I took all the rules of the world and I cataloged them into four categories. If you want to have a civilized society, you've got to have control on really bad things. Things like murder, destroying things, arson, burning down buildings, war and chaos. If you don't control that, you're not going to have a civilized society. And if you want to live in a civilized society, we've got to control the really bad things. Then there are the courtesy rules, saying please and thank you. Every society has courtesy rules. They help people to get along. Things like table manners, and you don't push in line, and rudeness, no rudeness, things like that. But then I got to have a place where I can break some rules. That's illegal but not bad. And a good example of illegal but not bad is circumventing ridiculous school bureaucracy things. You know, like maybe you have a child that's slightly underage to be at the community college. We'll enroll him anyway, but he's got to realize that that's a grown-up privilege, and he can't do things like interrupt in class. I was able to kind of rise to the occasion on certain things that were a grown-up privilege, like using my aunt's professional oil paints. I was very, very careful with those oil paints. I knew that that was a grown-up privilege. Then, in every society of the world, there's certain things that if you do them, you're going to be in so much trouble. It's just terrible. I call that the sins of the system. Some places, like one drug offense, you're in jail like forever. In Holland, it's legal. The sins of the system are not logical. Don't touch them. They get you into tons and tons and tons of trouble. Just don't touch them.